For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We need to, I think, mentally brace ourselves, emotionally brace ourselves over the next few weeks, probably, with the level of devastation that Hurricane Ian has brought to Florida, to a much lesser degree, South Carolina. You know, there's some other areas that had bad storms. But during the Category 4 phase of this, almost Category 5, damage is just immense. I think a lot of people just are having trouble putting their mind right. And I say we need to brace ourselves because we're probably going to get a stream of bad news as far as the fatalities, as far as businesses destroyed, as far as, you know, medical services disrupted. There's actually one connecting bridge between Fort Myers and what's the name of the town? Because I used to drive there, Cape Coral. And the bridge was like a 30 or 40 foot part of it just wiped away. I mean, concrete bridge. I've driven over it many times. The force of this storm is phenomenal. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what else we'll get a stream of is accusations and issues from the left about, you know, what Ron DeSantis hasn't done to help the people.
Well, we'll get to that later. But right now we've got a lot of St. Louisans who are there.
Right.
They are trained through the Red Cross, and they're going to be more likely deployed this week. And Sharon Watson from the St. Louis Regional Red Cross office is with us right now. And Sharon, appreciate you being on the program. First of all, how many of your volunteers, local volunteers, St. Louis volunteers, have already been sent to Florida, and what are they actually doing?
We currently have 14 people on the ground. We sent a team of two drivers down with an emergency response vehicle last week, and the rest flew down. They are helping with sheltering and with planning, with a lot of the logistics of making sure people are in the right place and getting what they need and getting the support from the Red Cross.
So we're talking just basic life stuff, like immediate, nothing fancy, just roof over your head, food in your stomach kind of stuff.
Exactly. That's what the Red Cross's primary focus is. Our focus is to make sure people have a place to stay. They can come in, get food, water, charge up their cell phones, you know, be able to try to start figuring out their next steps, but really just to have that immediate place to go for safety.
That's awesome, Sharon. This is Ken. The people that you've sent down there, are they trained for all of this? Are they just volunteers, or what's their situation?
Yes, they are volunteers who are trained prior to going with many hours of training, and also teamed up with people who've done this before and have experience with it as well. And so working in a shelter, of course, can be quite challenging. You're dealing with people's emotional needs, their physical needs, a lot of things. So they're there to help people with things like trying to replace their eyeglasses or get a CPAP machine for the night or replace wheelchairs and other medical equipment. So we have disaster health workers there helping. We have mental health workers, too, that come in to support with some of those mental health needs. So definitely a challenging situation that they're walking into. And even if they're there on a mobile feeding vehicle handing out food, you know, they're still hearing those stories of people who are really distressed and just trying to have a listening ear and try to figure out where to go next.
Okay, I want to get to what's next just ahead here in a second. But first, let me do a sidebar real quick, Sharon, because, you know, I have heard from so many relief agencies, nonprofit and governmental sector as well, who have said the same thing. And this is one of the things that a lot of people don't realize. There's sometimes what's called the second disaster. And that's really well-meaning people who just say, oh my gosh, look what happened. I'm going there to help out. And they show up and say, put me to work. Let me do something. And they're not trained and they don't know they're coming. And then you end up having to take care of them. So what we're talking about with Red Cross volunteers are people who have gone through training, know what they're doing. They're prepared for this. You know, you knew they were going down. And so this is the effective way. So if somebody says, I really, really, really want to help, let me do something, but they're not trained, the best thing they can do is probably financial support at this point, I would think. Sharon, is that right?
That was absolutely right. Yes, financial support is the best support for immediately helping out to be able to ensure that we're able to to continue providing that daily support and immediate needs, you can call 1-800-RED-CROSS or go to redcross.org to donate. You can also text to donate as well if you text Red Cross or at 90999. Or if you want it to go directly to Ian, you can text Ian to 90999, and that'll get a $10 donation to the Red Cross.
Okay, so, and I know Ken's got something else here, but let me ask again, what is still ahead? Like, will there be more St. Louisans being deployed to Florida?
Yes, we will continue to deploy more of our St. Louis area individuals who are on a waiting list, just waiting to get the call. We know that a lot of that just depends on what the needs are in Florida in the coming days, but we would anticipate more people to be going down to support the needs. There's also disaster assessment needs that they look to us for, to go out and kind of do general disaster assessments to determine all of the damage across the state and just help with the continued need for, of course, feeding and sheltering.
I was going to ask, I think, but that's okay. No, Sharon, you have this big event here going down to Florida, but are there any things, other things that the St. Louis area, American Red Cross is working on, here or outside of St. Louis right now in addition to Florida?
Yes, we actually have 5 individuals in Puerto Rico still for the hurricane there, and that number has dwindled quite a lot. We did have a significant number down there, and we had people out in the wildfires, but a lot of those teams have transitioned back home and are getting prepared to go to Florida over the next several weeks. Our teams go in for 2 weeks, and then they are relieved, and somebody else comes in behind them.
We are visiting with Sharon Watson from the St. Louis, the regional offices of the Red Cross. And Sharon, before we go here in a few minutes, I want to make sure that we give out all that information again as far as, if they want to make a donation. And also the next question, though, is if people see the work that's being done, you see, the devastation that's happening. There's a lot of people say, I should be doing something. If they want to be involved and they want to be ready for the next disaster, and there will be a next disaster, it could be weeks away, it could be years away, but there will be another one at some point if they say, I want to be available to do something like that. What does that process look like?
It basically is going to our website at redcross.org and signing up as a volunteer. They can basically, once they sign up, then the local office will be in touch with them and work with them on exactly what they want to do if they don't have an idea exactly what they want to do. And there are so many different things that you can do, even remote positions to help in the Red Cross. So it really depends on what your skill set is and what your preference is, what you want trained on to be able to join the Red Cross, and we'll get you set up and get you out there.
And Sharon, I know you'll accept anyone to take them through the process at first, at least. Is there an expertise that you're really looking for, though?
One of the things that we really need is people to drive our emergency response vehicles to Florida, and so that involves driving. It's just a larger size van. It's not a significant vehicle, but it's just training for that, and then doing the mobile feeding. We also are in need of disaster health workers, so people who have a health expertise or mental health expertise. We're always looking for them to help out in situations like this, and then individuals who are just willing to work in a setting where you might be dealing with a lot of chaos sometimes. So it's not always that way, but certainly it can be.
Sharon, there's probably a lot of people say, yeah, but that's what the government's for. That's what the, National Guard's for. And that's what they're going to take care of. Why is it so important to have in the private, in the nonprofit sector organizations, like yours? And you're not the only one. There are other organizations that specialize in different things that go down work in tandem. Why is it so important to have this multifaceted approach of nonprofit and government and others in a situation like this?
Well, you're absolutely right. The government actually relies on the Red Cross and all of these partner entities to do what we do during these types of disasters, so they don't have to. So when Red Cross is there and we're setting up shelters, that means that's one less thing that the government does not need to do. And for example, other feeding organizations, Southern Baptist, different groups like that are really key in actually coming in and actually setting up large kitchens and providing food. So all of those pieces are just so important in a situation like this, because it takes everybody. We really just couldn't do it by ourselves, and government couldn't do it alone. We need all of our partner agencies out there to help out.
So if somebody donates $10, $25, $100, $1,000, does that go? Where does that go? What does that money turn into right now?
If you designate it when you go onto the website to go to Hurricane Ian, it will go there. So you can, when you call in or you go on the website or you do the text, you can designate it to go there specifically. And that will just help with ongoing operations there, with providing all of the supplies that the Red Cross has to supply, with making sure we get people there, send them, you know, they're on flights. So there's a lot of expense involved in just getting our people there and having them there for 2 weeks. And of course, this operation will go on for many, many weeks.
Okay, Sharon, let's give out that that contact information and that donation information again real quick before we go.
Okay, you can call 1-800-RED-CROSS, or you can go to redcross.org on the website, or you can text the word Ian, I-A-N, to 90999 to give $10 to Red Cross.
All right, Sharon Watson from the Red Cross right here in St. Louis. Really appreciate the update. I may pester you for another update sooner rather than later as well.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, once again, redcross.org. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm going there during the information segment here. Going to make myself a donation. If you're going to make one as well, let us know about it. You can comment on, you can comment, tweet at us. You can comment on Rumble. You can comment on Facebook. Let us know. But I know that NewsTalk STL family can contribute something here as well. We can do it right now. It doesn't take much. 314-912-1019. This is 1019 and 94.1 NewsTalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.
During that information segment, I went to redcross.org after hearing from Sharon Watson. It took me 30 seconds to give him $50. Anybody want to match me on that? If you do, I'd love to hear it. 314-912-1019. I'm also looking at the Rumble chats as well. Feel free to let us know there. If you want a shout out, we'd love to give you a shout out if you want to do it, in honor of somebody else. Or you can comment at Facebook or tweet at us as well. But it doesn't take much. I mean, it literally took me 30 seconds to send him $50 for Hurricane Ian relief.
And if you're in a business and you want to challenge another business, a competing business, then how
absolutely.
About that too? 314-912-1019.
Yep, absolutely. So, but the reason that we ask those, not so you can necessarily pat your own back. That's not why I'm saying that I did it, but I'm hoping that it does give a little momentum. I mean, St. Louis, at some point, we've been hit by tornadoes. We've been hit by floods. We're going to get hit by tornadoes again. We're going to get hit by floods, and people all over the country make donations. It's what we do as Americans. I mean, we remember the Joplin tornadoes. We remember the 1993 floods, and part of our recovery was other people giving to organizations like the Red Cross, giving to organizations like Samaritan's Purse, giving to organizations like Convoy of Hope. But right now, we've got St. Louisans on the ground in Florida right now through the Red Cross. And so I'll probably give to some of the others too. But if you call in and say, yep, I'm giving them $25 or $50 or $100 or whatever it is, I'll match you, Mike. I'll match you at $50. That kind of, I think, inspires other people to get involved as well. 314-912-1019. Some of the national news. The U.S. Supreme Court begins a new term today. And, of course, the court looks just a little bit different because there's a new justice on the bench. Fox News' Jessica Rosenthal has the story.
Today marks Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's first term as a Supreme Court justice. The first case the court will consider has to do with whether the EPA has the authority to claim the Clean Water Act applies to an Idaho couple's plans for a piece of property the EPA says is technically wetlands. But there are other critical cases on the calendar, including two that could result in an end to affirmative action on public and private college campuses. Two other cases pertain to elections. One is a challenge to North Carolina's redistricting and whether gerrymandering violated the state constitution. Another case out of Alabama alleges the redrawing of congressional districts violated the Voting Rights Act. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
And I can tell you that some point later this week, probably on Wednesday, we are going to have a much more in-depth preview of the cases the Supreme Court has chosen, because just like the last session, they are only picking very consequential decisions that look to things like property rights, individual liberties, things like that.
And I'll be interested to see how Ketanji Brown Jackson votes. You can almost, you can kind of get an idea about the person, how they're going to be in the future. If you see, because the cross section of what we just heard that they're going to be voting on, it was a pretty good indicator.
It is. That's right. And I think, like, for instance, a lot of people point out just how far she is extremist to the left. she is. She's easily now probably more fringe to the left than, you know, Elena Kagan, and even more so than Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, and all and those justices. But here's the thing is it doesn't change the vote total. So what happened was we traded out an old liberal for a young liberal, and it's not going to change the votes, although she is farther to the left. But when it comes down to yes or no, the vote count really doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's still five conservatives, three liberals, and then Roberts and whatever he feels like on any particular given day.
And that would be the big surprise is if she acted like Roberts.
Yeah, I don't see that.
I don't see that either.
I don't see it either. I mean, you know, so even some of her comments during the confirmation hearings shows that she is highly ideological. You know, with Roberts, you know, at least he tries to make legal constitutional arguments. I just think he takes extreme liberties with the Constitution in order to do something basically pragmatic, and justices aren't supposed to be pragmatic. They're supposed to be, they're supposed to be, what's the, oh my goodness, I'm having trouble with words today. Originalist. That's what they're supposed to be, is they're supposed to be originalist, meaning this is what the Constitution says. This is what it was meant when it was written. No more, no less. Let the chips fall where they may.
Right.
And Roberts just is kind of wishy-washy on stuff like that. So it's going to be a fascinating, term, just like last year. Let's see here. This makes me mad. Okay. Normally I don't talk about just like property crimes and, you know, break-ins and things like that. But over the weekend, early Sunday morning, the historic Scott Joplin house, you know, on Del Mar, somebody broke into that and trashed part of the place. This really pisses me off. The deputy director for Missouri State Parks, his name is Brian Stith. He told our news partners, KMOV, that people walking by early Sunday morning saw someone throwing things out of the second story window of the home, and that's who called the police. So somebody broke in basically the back of the building through a window, and they got in, and police arrived, and they still had the person there, and they had damaged furniture. They had damaged some historical artifacts, including some of the musical instruments. Remember, Scott Joplin, a tremendous influence on American music in the early part of the 1900s, particularly obviously jazz, ragtime. So a large part of the culture of America in early 1900s, which continues to have an impact today, was affected by Scott Joplin.
Yeah.
Kind of a gem, you know, in St. Louis. And some jerk went in there and damaged it. And you can file an insurance claim if you want. But when you're breaking artifacts and you're breaking musical instruments, you don't get that stuff back.
No.
So that really, really ticks me off. So he lived in that particular home in 1901 to 1903. And so there's just some stuff that's going to be lost. But speaking of crime, St. Louis Board of Aldermen later this week, on Wednesday, are going to be discussing a non-binding resolution that would call for increasing the pay for St. Louis City police officers because they are losing so many police officers, and obviously crime is out of control. I don't know how anybody makes an argument that crime is under control or getting better. And you can say, well, we're not the number one murder capital of the country anymore, so it's going the right direction. No, it just means New Orleans is going the wrong direction faster, and they caught up to us.
No.
I mean, sometimes I think we're not number one in murder anymore because we're running out of people to kill.
No, I can tell you, I talked this weekend to a few police officers. That subject came up, and one of them is actually considering going to another Jefferson County, actually, because they're paying a lot more. And not only that, though, but it's the support they get from the prosecuting attorney's office and everybody. They can go through jump through all these hoops to get these criminals off the streets, but then they see them the next day on the street because they didn't do anything to prosecute them or to put them in jail, Mike.
Yeah, let's talk about this in more depth at 8:35. KMOV's Russell Kinsall did a report on this, and you mentioned that he's thinking about going to Jefferson County. Well, there's a reason for that. Jefferson County wants these police officers, and they're willing to pay more for those police officers. And while I know it's a whole different area because it's more of a rural, maybe slash suburban, but more of a rural community, they've got a whole different set of problems that they deal with. It is affecting the city. And you can say, well, they're poaching the cops. It's their fault. It's Belleville's fault. It's Jeffco's fault. No, it's not. If these police officers knew that they were appreciated, I think a lot of them would stay for a lower salary.
Yeah.
If they knew
they were getting the support.
Yeah, if the city hall had their back.
Yep.
But the city hall, because of the left-wing ideology, does not have their back. And then they wonder why they're losing police officers.
Yeah.
So let's go into more detail on that at 8:35, especially with what it means to you, whether you live in the city or not. This does affect us all. That's still ahead in about 4 minutes, right around 8:35 on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The week ahead. The first Monday of October means the Supreme Court starts its new term. Members of the public will be able to attend oral arguments, and the nation's high court will continue its audio live stream it began at the start of the pandemic. Tuesday, if weather permits, four astronauts are set to launch to the International Space Station aboard a SpaceX Dragon capsule sent into space atop a Falcon 9 rocket. The two NASA astronauts will be joined by a Japan Aerospace Exploration astronaut and a Russian cosmonaut for a planned six-month mission. Wednesday, OPEC and non-OPEC partners, the energy alliance known as OPEC Plus, is set to meet. The group recently moved to cut oil production targets by 100,000 barrels a day. Industry analysts say the alliance is expected to continue with its current oil production policy. Friday, more than half of those living in California will start seeing stimulus payments of between $200 and $1,050. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
All right, St. Louis City Hall is going to be discussing a non-binding resolution, which may or may not lead to a discussion as to whether or not they actually want a police force in the city. I don't mean to hyperbolize it, but basically that just kind of feels like where it's at.
That is where it's at.
Yeah. And so let's do that in about 30 seconds. Real quick programming note. Joe Pag Show starts at 7 p.m. every night here on News Talk STL, and I love Joe. Joe is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
His guest tonight is former President Donald Trump.
There we go.
Going to be on the show. So
awesome.
Check it out. 7 o'clock right here on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Just thought I'd mention that. People figured there's a few people who want to hear that.
Sure, absolutely. I'd say quite a few.
Yeah, so be sure to check that out. All right, so here's what's happening. Friday, there was a resolution introduced to the city council or the board of aldermen in St. Louis City. And Russell Kinsall from our news partners at KMOV covered the story because the board of aldermen basically now has to have a discussion about whether or not they want to be serious about public safety and law enforcement in the city. So I've grabbed a couple parts. I mean, Russell's story is pretty in-depth and you can find it at KMOV.com. But here's part of what the city will be debating, the Board of Aldermen will be debating on Wednesday.
I would like to make a motion to place Resolution 113 in Public Safety Committee.
South City's 14th Ward Alderwoman Carol Ward sponsored the resolution.
We're really bleeding officers.
The St. Louis Police Department started the year with 1,128 commissioned employees. It's hired 71 new officers, but more are going than coming. 154 left the force. As of today, the city's seen a net loss of 83 officers, or a 7% drop. Many of the officers leaving are going to departments with better pay.
Okay. Here's the thing is that's not a new thing. This has been happening. So that's when you look at the last year. And by the way, that was once again Russell Kinsall from KMOV. You compare that to the year before and the year before and the year before. You go back to the post George Floyd riots.
Yeah.
Then you go back to the post Michael Brown riots and the lack of support that law enforcement is getting in a lot of different ways in St. Louis. And you've got a significant deficit in the number of sworn police officers needed based on the size of the city of St. Louis. And that's where we're at. That's been going that way for years.
Yeah, I mean, it's an any job, Mike. If you don't have the support of the people who are in charge, then you It's not just the job itself. It's morale.
Yeah.
I mean, you really want to be able to have that backing and have the trust, really the trust from the people in the higher ups who are going to be supporting you.
And it's beyond the trust, though. You're right. But it's also about, when you're talking about the morale, it's about knowing that they at least are on your side. And this is why it gets into the actual ideology of the people we elect. This is why elections matter. This is why the conversations we have here with the News Talk SDL family, everybody who's listening, whether you're on the right or whether you're on the left or wherever, a lot of times people think that these are just big coffee clutches every day from 5:30 to 9 and then from 9 to 11 with Vic and then, you know, in the afternoon with Katie and Columbo and then with Chris and Tim in the late afternoon and then Joe Pags and then, you know, Bongino in the middays. That this is all just about, we're debating. We're having a philosophy discussion and our ideas are better than theirs and we win and they lose and that makes us better people. That's not what this is about. That's not what this is about. This is about getting hopefully more people to see, yes, there is a need for civil society to have law enforcement that is supported and accountable. Yes, without
a doubt. Sure, sure.
But what we have right now in the Board of Aldermen and in city government in general, mayor, prosecuting attorney, or circuit attorney, all of this is an ideology that at its logical conclusion brings us right to where we are. The number two most murderous city per capita in the United States, number one for years, high violent crime rate, people exiting the city as fast as they can, which leaves abandoned properties, which is also a haven for additional criminal activity as well. And you've got police officers who are leaving. Yes, there's more money, but my guess is that they're really leaving because their own city government is hostile to them.
And that's exactly it. It's not only their trust in the higher ups, but the higher ups trust in them. And you know what? It's kind of a revolving door, I guess you could say, or I don't even know how to explain it exactly, but it comes down to the people who vote. Mm-hmm. To vote them out and vote. I know they might be afraid because of a change of some kind. Well, you know, they may be thinking, the people of St. Louis I'm talking about, may be thinking, if I vote in Republicans, you know, we could get a really, you know, a police state. No, you can vote them out too.
Right.
I mean, but you've got to be able to get these people that are ensconced in the government here since 1949 out so that you can try something new. Otherwise, you're not going to try anything new.
You look at some of the numbers, and this is in Russell Kinsall's report, which you can find at KMOV.com. The starting salary for a St. Louis City police officer is $47,800 a year. That's pretty good for the Midwest.
Yeah.
It really is. St. Louis County, it's $55,000 and change.
So, and that's good.
Yeah, that's really good. You can make more immediately there. Chesterfield, $58,500. St. Charles County, just a little bit more there at the Sheriff's Department, $58,800. Jefferson County, $55,000 as well. Belleville, the city of Belleville, this actually really surprised me. Starting salary for a police officer, $71,000 a year. That's some good money.
Because they know the priorities there. And, yep. And I know in the past 10 years, Belleville's been facing a lot of crime.
Right. Yeah, absolutely they are. So the difference is Belleville says, we'd better have a police force that's dedicated to serving the community and stopping it. And St. Louis City says, let's decimate our police force and let them know that we're going to come after them whenever there's a conflict. We're going to assume the cops are in the wrong. And you've got a circuit attorney that doesn't want to prosecute criminals. And the first question she asks, well, is that cop racist?
Right. I mean,
whether or not they are.
Exactly. Would you want to pull your gun on anybody if they're aiming a gun at you?
Right.
If you think to yourself, well, no matter how good it seems like ironclad this is, if I shoot, I don't know what's going to happen to me after that.
And a no-go list because she doesn't like something that somebody put on a social media. I'm not going to take cases from that officer. So they are a logical response is they don't arrest as many people, especially if they know that somebody's going to be let out.
Yeah.
And so you've got a city government whose left-wing ideology can only result in people who are less safe, people who are hurt, and people who, I'll even say it, who get killed.
Yeah.
Because of a essentially pro-criminal mindset that is consistent with the far left. All right, let's talk about something a little bit nicer, a little bit more fun here to wrap up. How about the stuff that kind of unites us in St. Louis?
Yeah.
And over this weekend, it was the Cardinals and Yadi and Albert. What a special weekend it was.
And Waino.
And Waino. But I think we might get to talk about Waino again next year.
Yeah, I know.
We'll see here. All right, 850. We'll talk about that on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The 0-1. Albert lifts it in the air out to center. Going back, Reynolds at the wall. He's done it! He's done it! His final regular season home game, number 702. He's tied the game. He's tied Babe Ruth all time and runs batted in. 2,214.
On that turned out to be Albert Pujols' last at-bat at home at Busch Stadium in a regular season game, that call from MLB Network. What a special time. And by the way, quick trivia note, Albert Pujols' first at-bat at Busch Stadium in his career, he also hit home runs. So his first at-bat and his last at-bat in regular season play at home in a Cardinals uniform were home runs. I don't know that there could be anything more fitting than that.
No, and that's a nice script. I know. Yeah. I know. Vic's talked about having a movie of this whole thing, and he's been talking about that from the very beginning of the season.
Yeah,
you know, we've got to finish this thing off though, and that would make for a perfect movie script.
What a great pregame ceremony on Sunday. I'm thrilled that I was at Saturday's game. I'm bummed I missed Sunday's game. But I was at Saturday's game, and on Sunday, the pregame ceremony, I mean, the front office corporate folks, you know, we're talking, manager Ollie was there, but Albert Pujols, Yadi Molina, Adam Wainwright all gave just really cool speeches. And it was one of those things where everybody's on this, even the Pittsburgh Pirates are watching, and you could tell they were really excited to watch what was happening.
And impressed.
And they had the front, not even a front row seat, they were in front of the front row watching two future Hall of Famers being sent off by what, and when we say the best fans of baseball, I know that we say that because we're the homers here, you know, and we love our team. But I'm telling you, I have talked to current and former pro athletes around in my media career, and they will almost always tell you St. Louis is different, man. Man, those Cardinals fans, they get it. Nolan Arenado made it clear before Colorado traded him here that he wanted to play in St. Louis because of the organization and because of the fans and because of the baseball culture.
Yeah,
So that's one of the reasons he ended up here. And of course, I mean, the Colorado Rockies basically paid the Cardinals to take the best third baseman in baseball. But we'll talk about that at another time.
Well, I mean, you're a baseball guy. I'm a baseball guy. You know, I mean, you're more intense. You play now. But the fact is, Mike, if you're in another team and you're not doing so well, you see the Cardinals and they're interested in you. Are you kidding me?
No. Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also interesting when you look at ESPN posted the attendance for each team this year. Cardinals are number two.
Yeah.
Only the Los Angeles Dodgers had more people show up to games this season at home. And the Dodgers stadium is much bigger than Busch Stadium. Busch Stadium is not one of the biggest stadiums in baseball. The St. Louis Cardinals outdrew the New York Yankees this year.
That's crazy.
Amazing. Amazing. Here's a quick clip from Albert Pujols, basically saying thank you and farewell before his last home regular season game.
Dang, a slow start. I was like, man, I should have retired. There were so many things that came through my mind. Like, I should have died. But then I had a great faith in the Lord. There's no way that he brought me here to the city of San Luis to embarrass myself. Just like Paul, he wanted me to finish strong. And this is just one step that we take being in the postseason. So our next step is to try to bring a championship back to the city of St. Louis.
Oh, I love that. I love it. Before he spoke, Adam Wainwright had a chance to give his thoughts on Albert Pujols as well.
But he's also one of the best men and teammates that I've ever been around, and that's really what I came here to celebrate today. Albert, you're an amazing person, you're an amazing player, but you're the best, one of the best teammates I've ever had, and a man that everybody should look up to for everything you do on and off the field.
You know, I've talked to and interviewed a lot of people involved. I've never met Albert Pujols. Hopefully someday that I'll be able to. But there are times when you're working in this line of work that people will give you the skinny of what people are really like. I have never heard a single person say a bad thing about Albert Pujols. What I hear so often is sincere, sincere, sincere. And I love the fact that he says thank you to all the pomp and the circumstance. But he says, okay, but we got to stay focused. We got to win a championship. Yadier Molina, of course, made a lot of thank yous, but he also had some thoughts on playing in St. Louis with this baseball culture.
I'm proud, and it was a great honor to wear this uniform for 19 years here in St. Louis. In baseball heaven, and with you, the best fan in baseball. Thank you so much.
And then, of course, let me go back to Adam Wainwright, which you knew was going to be emotional for Adam Wainwright, his entire career, essentially, throwing to Yadier Molina. And we all know about the just legendary friendship that those two developed. And here's Adam Wainwright getting ready to give his pregame ceremonial remarks regarding his battery mate and good friend Yadier Molina.
And next, my catch partner, Yadier Molina. I'm going to try not to cry. I don't think I'm going to do a very good job of it. I'm going to miss you the most. I'm not going to miss having wet shoes and wet pants from you pouring water bottles down my back when you're not playing. But I am going to miss playing catch with you every fifth day. I believe you're the best defensive catcher to ever live. And maybe tied with number five, Albert Pujols, I believe you're the most clutch player that I've ever played with. And I think absolutely the smartest player that anyone's ever seen play this game.
So there you had. Now, don't forget, it's not like we're never going to see these guys again at Busch Stadium. We do have the playoffs, but this was the last regular season, so this was the time to do it. It was just a fantastic, the way that some of these things get very wonky and boring, but man, the Cardinals did it right, and the fans did it right.
Well, the 15 years or so that I played baseball, you know, what I had, there was a 3 or 4 year stint where I was had the same catcher, basically, and that's 3 years. I mean, that's not the time they put together. I mean, can you imagine being together that long and just the relationship that they had? It was amazing.
Twice in my life, and I play catcher, twice in my life, including right now, I have had that sort of very direct, I mean, connection with a pitcher that's just different. The one of the pitchers I catch for right now, Dennis, he and I are just on that same page. And as a result of that, we become even closer friends because of that, because of what happens on the field. All right. St. Louis Cardinals are going to finish the season in Pittsburgh. They lost last night, but who cares? I mean, it was a great, great, great weekend, great night. I was really happy to be able to see it on Saturday. Vic Porcelli coming your way here at 9:04 on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.